Chapter 4. A Better Way. Reclaiming the teen years as the launching pad of life. Raymond is 18 years old and lives in Baltimore, Maryland. His parents divorced when he was 14, and Raymond is involved in everything you can think of: smoking, drinking, drugs, even drug dealing. He moves from house to house, crashing with various friends, and has struggled to hold down even the most basic jobs. When he looks at the direction his life has taken, he expresses regret. When I first went to high school, my understanding was like, wow, this is the time to party. It's high school, and everybody's supposed to party in high school. But I don't know, he says. I wish I wouldn't have thought that. Raymond insists that he's not going to do drugs forever. He plans to sober up, get his GED, and move on with life. Someday he hopes to own a car dealership and sell BMWs. To help keep his dream alive, he subscribes to DuPont Registry, a magazine about luxury cars, houses, and boats. When he's older, he plans to go to church more, too. I think about my future a few times a week, he says. What do I want to do with my life? Do I want to sit around and be a pothead all my life? Heck no, he says. And so why not change now? I don't know, Raymond replies. I've thought about it, but I kind of look at this as the summer to have fun and party. I'm 18, and since I don't live under my mom's roof, I can be out as long as I want. So I'm like, this will be a summer for fun. I'm going to party and have fun this summer. Then after that, I just want to sober up and be clean and get my life together and straighten up. But I don't want the future to get here too quick, he adds. I still want to be able to live life and have fun. There's probably a little bit of Raymond in all of us. Do you see him in you or in people you know? His views reflect the thinking of so many in our generation. Like many teens, he figures that he has plenty of time. At any point in the future, he can decide to clean up, grow up, and pick up his life as if nothing happened. But is he right about that? In this chapter, we'll take a quick look at a whole group of people like Raymond. In fact, we'll even give them a name. Then we'll show you the huge opportunities they're missing out on. But just to warn you, we're going to use words Raymond probably wouldn't like. Because we describe these huge opportunities as five kind of hard things that have the power to launch us from where we are now to our best possible future. In 2005, Time magazine ran a story on kidults, a new breed of adolescents in their mid to late 20s and beyond who offer convincing evidence that the modern concept of adolescence is not a biological stage, but a cultural mindset. It doesn't stop when you graduate from high school, or when you turn 21. Everybody knows a few of them, the article pronounced, full-grown men and women who still live with their parents, who dress and talk and party as they did in their teens, hopping from job to job and date to date, having fun but seemingly going nowhere. And it's not just in America. Countries around the world have developed names for young adults like this. They're called kippers in England, nest hawkers in Germany, maman in France, and frieders in Japan. This isn't just a trend, a temporary fad, or a generational hiccup, the article warns. This is a much larger phenomenon of a different kind and a different order. But we shouldn't be surprised. After all, kidults are the logical result of the myth of adolescence, which encourages teens to view adulthood as spoiling the fun of the teen years, rather than viewing it as the fulfillment of the teen years. Being taught to avoid growing up doesn't help us launch into adulthood. At best, it leaves us hanging on the end of the diving board, stuck in the childishness and irresponsibility of adolescence. At worst, it leaves us floundering in the deep end of the pool, unprepared for the exciting challenges of life. Kidults are a tragic example of the myth of adolescence in action, and the consequences aren't limited to our teen years. After we shared Raymond's story at a conference in Indianapolis, a man, probably in his mid to late 40s, approached us. With tears in his eyes, he told us, "I'm Raymond. That story you told is exactly who I was." He explained that he had done well in school when he was a teenager. His high school had a three-class structure for each grade, and he was in the top class every year. Because school was going so well, he thought he was free to party and experiment with drugs. But more than 20 years have passed, and he's still struggling with the repercussions. "I thought the teen years were my time to party," he said, "and I've been paying the price ever since. I don't want teens today to make the same mistake. The good news is, we don't have to. As we saw in the last chapter, what is normal today is actually a cruel exception, a myth. The teen years have not always been thought of as a time to waste, and teens haven't always been ripped off by low expectations. But at the same time, there is hope, even for adults. As we encourage that man in Indianapolis, it's never too late to start doing hard things. William Wilberforce, one of the greatest revolutionary examples who ever lived, wasted the first 25 years of his life on parties and social extravagance. And yet, he went on to be the unrelenting force behind the abolition of slavery and emancipation of slaves throughout the British Empire. How did he do it? First, God broke through and changed his heart. Immediately, Wilberforce was filled with a profound sense of regret, bemoaning the shapeless idleness of his past and the most valuable years of life wasted and opportunities lost which can never be recovered. But second, Wilberforce chose to do hard things. He threw himself into study and serious work. For over 40 years, he fought against slavery in the British Empire, and, through his unwavering efforts, saw it abolished shortly before his death. Few men have left a greater mark on history. This is the good news of the gospel. God offers grace and redemption to those with wasted pasts. But let us never presume upon God's grace by wasting even a minute of what Wilberforce rightly called the most valuable years of life. Remember George, David, and Clara from the previous chapter? We left George as official surveyor of Culpeper County at age 17. David was in charge of a prize ship at age 12, calmly keeping an unruly captain under control. Clara was nursing smallpox patients and overseeing a classroom of students at 17. Each of them clearly used their teen years to train and to launch. So how did it serve them? After 3 years as surveyor in Virginia, the governor appointed George to the state militia as a major, a high rank. Then, when word came that the French were entering Ohio Territory, George was ordered to lead a midwinter expedition over hundreds of miles to assess their strength and to warn them to leave, which he successfully did. By age 22, George had been promoted to lieutenant colonel, and by age 23, he was commander-in-chief of the entire Virginia militia. You might have heard about what he did later in life, too. Exactly 20 years later, George became the commander-in-chief of the Continental Army in the Revolutionary War, later becoming the first president of the United States, George Washington. David's full name was David Farragut, the U.S. Navy's very first admiral and hero during the Civil War. His courage in the face of heavy enemy fire in the Battle of Mobile Bay won him lasting fame, but it was far from his first act of bravery. He had been preparing for that moment ever since his childhood days as a cadet on the Essex. Clara is best known as the founder of the American Red Cross, Clara Barton. Her desire to serve others started when she was 11 years old, caring for her brother David, and it only grew from there. To the sick in her village, to the children at the school where she taught, to thousands of wounded men in the Civil War, and later to millions through the American Red Cross. There's a reason we still know the names and stories of men and women like George Washington, David Farragut, and Clara Barton. They invested their teen years in a way that shaped them into the history makers they later became. Most of you probably weren't surprised to hear how George, David, and Clara turned out. That's because inside, all of us know that the teen years aren't some mystical period disconnected from the rest of our lives. For good or for bad, they will launch us into the future. Our future. We need to be honest with ourselves. Is how we're spending our time right now preparing us for what we hope to become in the future? Are we doing things now that will equip us for the greater things God may have for us to do? These are the fundamental questions for this season of our lives. Let's close this chapter by looking at what we call the five kinds of hard. They aren't secret, mystical, or helpful to just some, or even to just teens. They're God-given opportunities powered by God-given principles that work for everybody. If we launch into these opportunities now, we'll see powerful results, both now and in our future. So here we go. 5 different kinds of hard things. Number 1. Things that are outside your comfort zone. This could include activities like public speaking, learning a new skill or expanding an old one, traveling to new places or meeting new people. Anything that takes you outside of the rut of your normal day-to-day, week-to-week activities would fall into this category. These actions can challenge us because they're unfamiliar or even scary, but they usually become some of our greatest memories, and they always end up growing our comfort zone for the future. Number 2. Things that go beyond what is expected or required. For example, say you only need a C to pass a class, but you aim for an A+. You aren't content to do no harm. You purpose to do good. You might volunteer to clean up after the church breakfast, stay late at work without pay to help a friend finish a job, or perform household chores you aren't even assigned. These actions are hard because they rest entirely on our own initiative. No one else will make us do them. Because of this, they are almost always the accomplishments we feel best about. Number 3. Things that are too big to accomplish alone. These are usually big projects like organizing a rally, making a film, forming a teen ministry to the homeless, changing your school's policy on a key issue, campaigning to get a shock jock off the air, or starting a band. They could also include really big causes like fighting modern-day slavery, abortion, or poverty and AIDS in Africa. We're passionate about these causes because God has placed them on our hearts. In order to be effective in these kind of projects, we must be able to share our passion with others and recruit them to work alongside us. Number 4. Things that don't earn an immediate payoff. These are tasks like fighting sin, working out, doing your schoolwork, and obeying your parents. They're hard because you don't see much progress from one day to the next, and because, especially at the time, it can seem like you'd be happier if you didn't do them. Also, these are often tasks that no one else sees and that don't win you recognition or praise. Things like being faithful in your spiritual disciplines, expending energy on good study habits, or driving the speed limit, even when you're late. But we do them because they're right, not because they have an immediate payoff. In every case, we'll be better off long-term, even though the things are hard or distasteful in the short-term. Number 5. Things that challenge the cultural norm. These choices go against the flow. Dressing modestly, saying no to premarital sex, holding unpopular positions on issues like homosexuality and abortion, refusing to watch R-rated movies, sharing the gospel with others, or living as an obvious Christian. These choices are hard because they can cost you popularity and friendships. In some countries, they can even cost you your life. In order to accomplish things in this category, we have to care more about pleasing God than we do about pleasing people around us. But the payoff is huge. If we do them, we can change the course of history. As you hear the 5 categories, you probably thought of some hard things you've already done. If so, we're asking you to throw yourself into doing these things with a new level of passion, because they are unique challenges God has prepared for you, because it's what you were made to do. We're asking you to live not your easiest life, but your best life according to God. 5 simple but power-packed choices help make that possible. That's what we're going to look at next.